I didn't give the title to be announced yet, but maybe I should put it on the blackboard in order to keep you awake.
That's what TBA stands for variance.
Yeah, exactly. So the title I did not announce was Noise as Signal, which is obviously a contradiction, and I hope this will keep you awake for a while after this firework of Chaim. So clearly this cannot be. I mean, a noise cannot be a signal. A noise is by definition what is not the signal. So, and it will turn out that this is nonsense. But it will turn out that you can put a signal into the variance, and that this putting the signal you want to transmit in a neural population into the variance is not something you would do just because for fun, but because it is the best way to transmit a signal through a population of neurons. That's the claim. So hopefully this prediction will keep you awake. But to get started, I have to make some remarks on what we're actually talking about. So what everybody assumes, also Chaim assumed in his talk, is that there's a lot of variance in the responses. Oops. Response. I think we have to put out this light in front. That there's a lot of variance in the responses of neurons, at least in cortex. In other animals, like insects and so, like Chuck Stevens also talked about yesterday, if you remove one neuron, then part of the function fails. In cortex, it's different. If you remove a cell, the function is just staying the same, many people assume that this just reflects that the system has a lot of redundancy. What is shown here are responses of one cell in monkey MT. Every trace here, every little dot here is a spike, and every trace here is a repetition of an experiment. So the experiment is some stimulus on a screen, and it is repeated exactly the same way in every trial. So every time the stimulus goes across the screen, the neuron will fire. And if you just do this very, very many times and you sum it up, you will see that there is some dependency of the rate, so the number of spikes within a certain time bin, on the stimulus. But if you look at the individual traces, so this is this part here expanded here, you see that the individual spikes more or less lay where they want. And in order to quantify this variability, this randomness within the responses, You can try all kinds of measures, and the easiest thing you can do is just look at the interspike interval distribution. So you plot the number of intervals versus the length of the interval, and then you see that it obeys an exponential law. So it looks like that the spikes are emitted very similar to a Poissonian process. Another way of showing this is to count the spikes within a certain interval of arbitrary lengths and plot the mean of this count versus the variance of this count, not the variance versus the mean. And for the Poisson process, you would find that this would be that the ratio of variance versus mean would be exactly one. And what you see in the data is that these dots actually lie even above the line of one, which would be this. This dotted line. So everything looks as if the neurons are firing highly irregular. But there are now several questions you can ask on the system. First of all, what causes the neurons to be firing this regular? And the second more interesting question for me is it useful? Is it good for anything that these neurons are so irregular? So you have these two questions, and many people have been discussing these questions during the past. And Chuck Stevens is sitting here, so I show a picture of his paper in Nature Neuroscience. But it was Christoph Koch who brought up this issue and said, the fact that the neurons fire highly irregular is a miracle, because if a neuron receives a noisy input, and it is an integrator, it takes some time to reach threshold, like for instance the integrate and fire neuron, which I put here. So you have membrane potential, time constant, reset potential, and input. If you give a constant input, even if it is noisy, this neuron will fire very regular. The reason is, it's like, even if it's like a Geiger counter, but the Geiger counter only gives a click every 10 events, then it will be a very regular signal. And this does not depend on the special choice of the model I have here, the integrated fire neuron. If you inject a current into a neuron, this is from the paper of Chuck Stevens and Tony Zader, if you just inject a current and it's constant, you will get a very regular response. And even if you inject a constant current with some fluctuations on them, you will get still a very regular response, and it needs a huge amount of fluctuations in order to get something which looks like a neuron in vivo, very, very irregular. So it seems that to get the responses you actually see in the brain, as irregular as you see them in the brain, you would need to have high, very high fluctuations injecting into the neuron. So it seems that if you would need, so to say, irregular synchronous events in order to get irregular events out of the neuron. But this is only one picture. Actually, Shetland and Newsom put now the possibilities to explain the high degree of irregularity into a very nice picture. So the issue here is, we would like to have consistency. We would like to have a neuron which responds irregular as they do in cortex, and we would like the input to have the same structure as the output. Otherwise, we are doing some tricks. We postpone, so to say, the explanation. If we say the neuron receives highly synchronous irregular input, no problem. We will get an irregular output, but then we would have to explain where the irregularity comes, the synchronous irregularity comes in the first place. So what we would like to have is a bunch of neurons firing irregular, presynaptically, then the neuron, and then that the output, again, looks at, has the same statistical structure as the input. Otherwise, we'll not have an explanation. So as I said, this is a problem for the usual integrating neuron. If you assume, and this is just an extreme caricature of a neuron where you have a particle moving between a barrier and a threshold, absorbing threshold, and every pulse this system receives, it decays with a time constant of 20 milliseconds, say. And you assume that the coupling strength is such that it needs 150 steps to reach threshold. Here we have 200 neurons. This is time. These are traces of the 200 neurons. Each neuron is fed into the system. We have a coupling strength that it takes about 150 steps in order to reach threshold. This is the integrating case. Then we will get a highly regular response of the system. So one way around this, to avoid this this regularity, is to say, oh, the effective time constant in the system is very short. Then we can put the coupling strengths much stronger, because the probability that neurons will be coincident within a short time step is smaller, depends on the time step, and we will get more irregular responses. So this is one way. This is, so to say, the coincidence detector regime, where you say the coupling strength is strong and you exploit fluctuations by just ignoring most of these events and taking a small amount of them. The other possibility, which is the one I will try to talk about here more in detail, is...
But you're gonna reject D because that time is small compared to the voltage integration time. Is that why you're rejecting D?
No, this is the voltage integration time.
But there's, even when channels are open, as experimental issue, you don't see such short times. So they're going to reject you.
Well, we just had the talk by David McLaughlin with the digital model of V1. He actually argued that's the regime the neurons operate in V1. They are driven by the optimal signal they get up to tau equals 1.
I wouldn't make no choice. I just want to present the possibilities. Okay? I would not. I have no how you say stocks in this.
If for example something to say,
gravity,
for an interneuron, time is about 6-7 milliseconds. And if you take into account all the synaptic input to the neuron that can decrease tau by a factor of 3, then you can be barely.
What is the problem?
To get the short integration time. So the coincidence detector regime.
Well, they're not using it. I mean, that.
What is the response?
They're not using it anyway. Nobody's going to use this one in a second.
At least I will not. But this is one possibility to get.
The model later on is using 20 in a second.
Yeah. But here, I mean, at least this is one possibility. Why not? This is a possibility to get get a consistency between the high degree of irregularity in the input and the irregularity in the output. So
the claim then would be that if you have an electrode close to the synaptic inputs in the cell, you should see a field potential that has spectral power up to, you know, whatever, 1/2 pi millisecond. I mean, you know, is that right? It's sort of sort of the claim. Is that a reasonable claim?
The claim here would be that your integration time is essentially 1 millisecond. It's not my claim. It's just.
I guess I'm really, really confused. It's been quiet all day.
Yeah.
If the spike shuts off.
Kicking.
No, if the spike shuts off the synaptic current, voids the cell, resets, then isn't it effectively 1 millisecond time cost? Every time the spike fires, it comes back down. It's back to where it was.
No, there is
a current that goes into a cell with a certain time constant. Yeah. And then you have to convolute that current
with the kernel of this time.
The cell might be weaky because channels are open and therefore
its
resistance
is low. Every time it fires a spike, it's
a bit. No, but this would say that even if you prevent the cell from spiking, you still get the
integration. I don't mind that. Postsynaptic cell.
So,
I don't know, but functionally it behaves like that if the spike shunted anyway.
No, so but 1 millisecond is also, it will also be in between this.
No.
It's also, this 1 millisecond means not only the shunting, but also that it will recover as fast. Between the spikes, it will also all the time, not just some critical.
Yeah. But that's actually not the route I will take in this talk, so please, let's discuss this somewhere else. But. There is a third possibility, a second possibility to get irregularity, which is you do not only have a bunch of neurons, so a population of neurons feeding into this neuron, which is excitatory, but you also have many neurons which feed into this neuron, which are inhibitory. So you just take the same number, 200 cells, but now every delta pulse here is going on this membrane potential with either sign. When it comes from excitation, it goes up, inhibition, it goes down. Then this membrane potential will perform a random walk, right? And it will hit threshold more or less randomly, and you will get tuning the coupling strengths accordingly easily.
So what's the issue here? The EPSP is gradual. What is the issue here?
In the mean, the
excitatory and the inhibitory will cancel, and you will just be driven essentially by the noise.
It's like the last election in the U.S.
Okay, but this picture is not new at all. This is a picture by discussed in the context of neurons by Gerstein and Mandelbrot. What was
it? This is a model of the last election, but I say the model is much older.
The model is from. But this sounds like a strange notion, because if excitation and inhibition cancel essentially, what is there? What is the signal? And I mean, this is essentially the issue of this talk, that the mean current injected to the neuron, mean over time. Now we are in the regime where we have constant rates, excitatory and inhibitory rates, the mean will be zero, but the variance will be a constant number. Yes, will not be zero.
But you're not naive enough to believe that cancellation has to be precise.
No. I will be talking about a non-perfect balance in the end. I'm not assuming perfect balance. But here you already see what happens. If the excitatory and the inhibitory neuron fire with the same rate, and we have Poisson process, the mean will cancel, but the variance will be proportional to the rate. So obviously the variance can be a signal. You just feed the system with noise, and you get spikes out, whose rate will depend essentially only on the noise.
Yeah,
Okay.
Is the boundary condition on the lower guide important at all?
No. No, it could be.
It could just be a wall.
It could be a wall.
Klaus, there wasn't room on your page there for another possibility. I understand, but it's a theoretical possibility that the inputs are not independent, right?
Yes.
And that will also do it.
Yes.
That's just a small n. That's just back to small n.
That's essentially the small n limit.
No, large n, but that's cool.
Okay.
But I mean, it's a small number of independent. Okay.
But then, as I said, you would have the following problem. You would have an irregular output, and you would have to explain it from an irregular but correlated input signal. So the irregularity is not explained, right? You just explain how to get it through the neuron, but you don't tell anything about.
Yes, but Klaus, David Hansel and Chaim did it about.
It can be generated.
It can be generated.
So that's an answer.
No, but the issue here is transmission. So
what?
How to get it through the neuron?
No, you have a natural thing, you can get it through.
I think the gist is that we have a neuron that was...
The picture we have now is that we have a signal R, yes, and we get some output signal, say R out.
Yeah.
Okay? So now it seems, if you drive the system with noise, it seems that this is a strange thing to do, because then everything, all the information about the signal you would like to put through this neuron, all information is contained exclusively in the rate, right? Okay? So there is no information in the detailed interspike interval. You have to, it seems that you have to assume that you have to count many spikes in order to estimate something about the input, right? On the input side... Yes?
Are you still addressing the issue of mechanism for the viability, or are you addressing now another question, a new question?
Now I'm addressing a new question.
Okay.
Now I'm addressing the question how to get...
So you assume that balancing, okay? No, because I think Chuck was referring to the earlier part.
Yeah, he said there's another possibility.
There was a same page, but if there had a longer page, you could have put another one on.
Which is the correlation.
Yes.
Yeah. And if the correlations were about the same as you went through the circuit, then
so I'm saying
this input now is
if neurons are rationally connected, which they prefer to not to consider, if neurons at each state would be rationally connected, they can maintain synchronized irregularity.
Sure.
If
the degree of correlation stays constant as you go through the system, then the input and output statistics would be the same for all the neurons, and the mechanism would be the same. So, I mean, that's just a possibility. This is another
one. Yes. Mm-hmm. But now the issue here is not where does the noise come from, but is it useful for anything? Okay.
Interesting.
And now the question is, what? Now this for many people just Chaim to give a talk and he said, okay, rate is everything I need. I assume independent Poissonian counting of spikes within time windows. That's it. But the question is. Is this a good signal? A signal is something which depends on t, right? A signal is something which changes in time. The question is how good a signal is a rate, and how good a rate can be transmitted by neurons. Okay. Now the question is, if you have a neural population and something in the world happens in time, and you have to encode it in a rate, how do you do it? And can you do this fast? Can you transmit changes in a signal rapidly through a neuronal system with populations if you only have the rate? Okay?
Yes.
And the question here is, at first sight, it seems stupid to do this if you look at one neuron because it takes a long time until the next spike, and then another time, and so on. And you have to count many spikes, and then if it's Poisson, then your standard deviation will fall like 1 over square root of n, right? So it seems that rate is a bad thing to do if you look at an individual neuron. But mathematically, a rate is something which can change arbitrarily fast, right? You just don't see it because you have only spikes now and then. Okay? But mathematically, there is no limit to the speed, how fast you change the rate. It's just a question how to estimate from these numbers this underlying signal, right? Okay? It's clear that you can, if you have independent processes and you can average over many independent neurons, then it's just a question of how many neurons do you need to estimate what precision in the signal. Okay, so what I'm just doing here is a back of the envelope calculation just to show that rates are not necessarily slow signals. The point is there is a lot of evidence that a lot of processes go through the brain within, say, 10 or 20 steps, synaptic steps, and we can recognize faces, pictures, animals, and so on within a short number of synaptic steps, meaning that like 100 or 150 milliseconds we push the button. And this means that if it all has to be done by rates, that a graded signal has to go through the system with essentially one spike per station.
Can you tell me what is your definition of rates? If you take rates of in a 1 millisecond, three...
No, I take rate as a continuous function of time. Uh-huh. Then the number of spikes I will count within an interval delta t is just r of t times delta t. If I have many neurons,
this is the mean,
yes. The mean number of counts. This mean number of counts, if I have many neurons do encoding the exact same signal, then this mean will be just n times the other one. And if these processes are all independent Poissonian processes, then the variance of this count will just be this number. And this is just the ratio as one. And so if you do a little calculation, you can ask how many neurons will I need to, not with complicated measures, just by asking how many neurons will I need to distinguish a 10 hertz background signal from a 10 hertz, a 20 hertz switch within, say, 1 millisecond of time. I give you 1 millisecond of time, how many neurons will you need to distinguish this? It's just, you put in the numbers, you say, I want to have that the difference between the means be just the two standard deviations, the standard deviation of the one or the other, or take a factor of two, if you like, two standard deviations, and then you will find 500 neurons will do the job. So if you have 500 independent neurons, you can make a clear distinction between 10 and 20 hertz firing rate within 1 millisecond. The important point is here, the number of neurons is not very large. It's reasonably large. And 1 millisecond is not a big deal for a rate. Yeah? Now, but we are back to square one. I assumed independence of neurons firing. And the question is, how can this be? If I give this constant 10 hertz firing rate, I will get a very regularly firing neuron. If I give the 20 hertz firing rate, I get a very regularly firing neuron. with a constant signal, I can calculate everything. So I get a gain function, anything. But coming back now to this point, what we want to do is we want to modulate the rate here in time, the output rate in time, yes, depending on some signal here. And we want to put everything into the noise, right? So if I look at my integrated fire neuron, so I have my equation for the integrating fire neuron. I put here the input current. Then I could put the input current as a constant plus some. The first step I want to do is constant plus a constant noise, just for didactical reasons that you see how the story goes. So the first thing is that your gain function is modulated, is changed by the noise. That's something everybody knows. But it's important to note that if you plot the output rate of the neuron versus the input current, so this is the mean current, and you add noise to the current, then the threshold disappears and you get a smoothing out of the threshold. And this is usually what people say what noise is good for. People, they say, no, you don't consider noise as a signal, but just as a means to help the signal to go over threshold, because nothing will be transmitted in this regime unless you add some noise. But that's not what I'm talking about here. You can just put on another gain function where you plot the output rate with fixed mean input depending on the noise level. But it's you're free, right? You can just ask how many spikes will I get in a certain time interval, which is here the membrane time interval, depending not on the mean input current, but depending on the fluctuations on the mean input current. And clearly, the more fluctuations, the more spikes you will get. So in this sense, already for the mean variance, for a constant time constant variance, the variance itself is a signal, right? Because the firing of the neuron will increase if the amount of noise, so to say, will increase. But this does not answer the question how a signal is transmitted, because what I'm heading at is I want to ask not how does a neuron transmit a constant signal, but how does it transmit a time-varying signal? Are there limits to the frequency, for instance, of these changes? And how do they depend on mean and variance? Okay. And actually, this is how the whole project started. I actually should mention who worked on this project. It's with Misha and then with Gilly Silberberg. And finally, the experiments will be with Henry Markram. But we started actually with very simple simulations, and we were quite amazed by the fact that populations respond very rapidly to changes in the input rate. So the picture here is I just have one neuron, and it receives excitatory input. And the excitatory input is just a Poissonian process with temporally varying rates. So what has changed here is just the rate of the Poissonian processes this neuron receives, and what is shown here is the output rate. So we just repeat the experiment with the identical input rate, new realizations of the processes, and just average over many repetitions, like 10,000 repetitions. No, this is just numerics, just numerics. And what you see here is something which we actually did not expect at this time, that the output rate changes in a faithful way. It just reproduces the input rate, except for some transients at abrupt changes in the input rate. So you see here some transients. I will talk about that later. If you give a peak, then you get a transient.
What do you mean by output rate now?
Output rate is just the number of spikes.
No, but average over what?
Average over many repetitions. So many it's like a population
of the same Poisson process in the input.
Of the same Poisson processes in the input, yes.
The bottom trace is the spikes.
And this is the bottom trace now shows that there is a problem, because this, even though this is a good, it seems to be a good signal to transmit just to put the input rate here, you see that the output is very regular, as predicted. It's only excitatory input.
So the problem is the regularity, the problem is the lack of transmission.
Now, the question is, why is it so fast? I'll come to this in more detail. Why is it so reliable?
What is the bottom?
The bottom is just one trace.
Yeah, but what is the question posed by the bottom? You said something, the problem.
No, the problem here is this does not look like cortex.
I know, but it's not the problem of transmission of information.
This is not the problem of transmission of information. What you see here is individual processes can be highly regular.
No, but I thought your point was that if you look at spikes,
yes,
you sort of sample sparsely the underlying rate, and there is a problem there. And I'm confused. Is this a problem you're trying to address? Because the output rate is continuous, but you have to look for many neurons to actually to
500.
So you are happy with 500 or not? I'm confused about the problem. What problem are you addressing? Is this a question of how to generate variability, or addressing how to efficiently decode changing rate? 500 neurons is fine with you?
500 neurons is fine for decoding, yes, within 1 millisecond.
So the discreteness of spikes in the output is not a problem?
No, the discreteness of spikes here is not the problem. But you see that there is something happening here. So at these steps, you get all kinds of transients.
Is something good or something bad? I don't understand.
I show it in the next picture, okay? So what is happening here in this situation, if you give a sudden change in the input Poissonian rate, you get a very rapid response, but it is not faithful, because it does not reproduce that this is just a constant.
It has information, but it has a
large and long-lasting transient.
We don't like that
long-lasting transient. We'll show you, because this is not a good transmission. I mean,
it's not a good one.
It's not a good in the faithful representation of the signal. So if you imagine you have many such steps, you will get many overlaying oscillations in the system. And it's very, I mean, in principle, the information might be there, but it's a lot of long-lasting transients.
Where do the oscillations come from?
Because the
reference on the previous one, tonight, would say that if you had an integrated fire neuron, that you have a perfect, that you have a perfect replication of the step.
Yeah, but that's not true. The oscillations come. So this is the population response. So this is just having many, many neurons receiving a step in the poisson. I just explained the oscillations, okay?
What's the difference between you and the previous one?
It's a huger step. It's just a huger step. And you start with a lower initial rate. That's the difference. So if you start with a lower initial rate. This is a step forward in the talk, but I want to give the explanation now. So how do you describe such a population rate? And what you do is you say, you have threshold, this axis is membrane potential, and all the neurons, you can describe the system, so the population of neurons, by a distribution function, P of V and T, which just tells you how many neurons are there in a certain interval.
Because before that, I think there is something...
One more sentence.
Okay. Maybe two. There's something more elementary. Suppose you detect any condition, not Poisson, then you just have regular oscillation.
Yeah, that's where I'm coming to. Yeah, but I'm now with the input with Poisson, and I give the explanation, but the same explanation is, if you get many neurons across threshold, they're all reset here, right? And then you have a mean drive.
Okay,
so this just runs through and decays.
When Bruce did his calculations, he was assuming that you had all the neurons out of phase. And you're assuming that they aren't starting all at equal.
No, but you assume that you are in the stationary distribution corresponding to this rate.
You hit it so
So you start with a stationary distribution here.
You hit it so hard.
Which I will talk about later.
Yeah.
And then you perturb this distribution, and it takes some time to relax back, and this during that time you will have oscillations. Because it's just very simple, if, as Chaim said, if all your neurons would be here, and you would give a current step and drive them over, then they will just run through periodically. So with the small noise, or no noise, the stationary distribution is a delta function at the reset potential.
Then they all behave together. If there is no noise, they will all behave together.
No, now we're coming to the point. And I'm just continuing this. So we played around, and we had the balance. And in the balance case, you have less. Well, we'll not go to this too well. So the simulation gave an intuition that there is enough, and there was other people who were talking about that. And saying, okay, the simulations show if I have noise, which was given by the Poisson in that case, then the signal transmission by the system is quite faithful. So if I make a change in the input, I get a rapid response. So the question was, how rapid is it really, and from what does it depend? In order to do a calculation here, we have to describe more carefully what actually we are talking about. So. What we are talking about are many neurons, all indexed by I. So we have many neurons. Each neuron has its individual membrane potential. Each neuron receives a time-dependent input current, and that's it. Okay. So if we have a population of such neurons, many, say n to infinity, just for the calculation, then we can make a change of variables. We can describe the mean. Actually, we scale the input current, and then we describe the mean by mu. It's just the mean current at time t, mean over all the population. So you must imagine you have many neurons. Every neuron receives a current, and I calculate the mean current into the population. The mean is over the population. So at every point in time, I can have a mean input current, and at every point in time, I can have a temporally varying variance of this. So it's just a deviation of each individual current into each individual neuron from the mean. Okay? So So, and if we do this, then we get the equation which is called Langevin equation, and this distribution actually then is described by a Fokker-Planck equation if the deviations from the mean are Gaussian distributed. Okay, which is not the general case, but this is a special case we can look at. So, and actually this gives us a framework to understand when and why the signal is transmitted rapidly or not. So to look more carefully is there were claims that already the presence of noise in the system is sufficient to make the system rapidly respond to a change in the mean. So if you make a step from a step in the mean, given some noise, so what we're now doing, maybe I forgot to say. What we're now doing, I'm assuming that I can decompose, I can always decompose the mean and the variance over the population just mathematically. But what I'm now doing is I'm changing the mean in time, and I'm changing the variance in time, and I'm assuming that the noise is Gaussian distributed. So this is just a Gaussian. So every point in time, you just pull a random number from a Gaussian distribution. This is done individually for every neuron. So every neuron has its own individual noise, right? Gets an independent current, which deviates from the mean. But both numbers can be varied independently, which is something hard to imagine. But
is it? The Langevin equation is set for the spike, and then the spike resets it to zero.
The spike goes in the boundary conditions of the Fokker-Planck equation, which I will talk about later.
Not the Langevin equation. Then you reset it to zero.
Yes, reset it to zero. Actually, the threshold is at one. Reset is to zero, I think. Yeah, choose a variable slightly.
Plus, I'm sorry, this is something that's bothering me. I can't hear the talk, but I keep thinking about it. Okay. What Bruce Knight showed was that if you have an ideal integrated fire neuron and that you have a random distribution of neurons in all phases,
yes,
that replicate in the limit of large numbers of neurons, it replicates the input signal identically.
What
Bruce used was an ideal integrated fire.
Yes.
So those oscillations came from the fact you had a weak integrated fire.
No. You would also get oscillations in the ideal integrated fire.
How does that?
Well, if you prepare it,
it's a very easy answer. If you have all phases,
yes,
and you have a constant input, say constant current, then an individual neuron runs out here, and this is just periodic boundary conditions, right? Yes. If you now increase the current, you just increase the speed. But since the distribution is flat, right, you get nothing.
That's what Bruce says.
That's okay. So what you need is this is a stationary distribution, is just sitting there, not changing. So if you would put a perturbation here, this would also not change. It would just run through.
Right.
So this system, if you give us perturbation, however you do this, I don't know, I mean, the system doesn't allow it, but if you could push them together, you'll always get distillations, will never die out. You see? So this system is somewhat special. Now you add noise, okay? If you add noise, something dramatically different happens. And it will turn up later in the equations, I'll just tell you the result. This is an infinite jump at the threshold. It's just periodic boundary. As soon as you add noise, this has to be a smooth function here. It's not allowed to jump because in the rate equation from the Fokker-Planck, it depends on the slope of the distribution at the threshold. And when the slope is infinite, the rate will be infinite with noise. I'm just telling you why the Bruce story is a very special and non-realistic case. Okay. With the smallest amount of noise, you will have something...
Noise in what now?
In the current, in the input current.
Okay.
You mean if no, that's not right. If you put noisy input current into an ideal integrating fire neuron, it will give you the not output just exactly the same, exactly noisy.
Ideal, not not you need a leak.
Okay.
With a leak.
Okay.
With a leak. With a leak.
That's what the question.
Okay.
With no leak.
With no leak. It's even more special.
So the reason the oscillations are coming is because of the leaky integrating fire, not the fact that it's noise.
If
you have an ideal integrating fire and you put a noisy input in.
But if you have an ideal integrator, it's just a movement on the circle. Just a movement on the circle.
It's an ideal integrating fire neuron. You put in something in, you get it out, you have an infinite population of them. There's nothing there. If they start evenly distributed.
So if you prepare them evenly distributed, they will keep. At the moment you introduce the leak, even if you prepare them, even if
right.
So the moment you change the input is...
I think the linear distribution is changing. When you have a leak, it depends on the rate, otherwise it's always uniform.
It's always uniform, yeah.
Yes.
No, it's not uniform. You can just prepare it as
you
wish.
You can have it anywhere you want to.
You can have it where you want.
It will not stay there.
Right. It will not change.
So what actually happens with noise? It will not stay. It will go to flat. Yes.
Well, it looks like the stable one will be uniform.
I can listen to the talk now because I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Okay, but the point here is we are now taking the population in order to introduce a mean, which is a mean over the population. So this is just the mean current into the population. The population is a functionally meaningful thing in the brain because it needs a lot of neurons to feed another neuron. And we are just separating the mean and the variance. And in order to do some numerical experiments, we just see what happens if we assume that the variance that the random part is Gaussian. Okay. So in that case, you can very easily play around with mu. You change mu, you change the mean, and keep the noise level constant, which you cannot do with Poisson. In Poisson case, the things are coupled, except for the case of balance. So we are playing around with a Poisson.
You can put that as well.
Yes.
We talked about means in different senses. I think mu is the mean in the sense of the moon in terms of I.
Yes.
I'm asking, when you say mu is mean, what do you mean? What is this argument?
Like, over the population.
So
the neuron.
So mu is the mean of the population. Sigma is defined in terms of the statistics of the underlying
Gaussian. Mu minus I, square, averaged over I, right?
Average over I?
Yeah, over the population.
No, then you don't get eta.
No, this gives you the sigma square. And the eta is a random number, and I assume that it's Gaussian. That's assumption.
So you have to assume you have to average over eta also to get sigma.
Yes, sure.
So there are two averages here. I mean, the spatial average and there is average over some underlying statistics.
Yes.
And I'm trying to clarify the meaning of the different quantities here. If I get some,
everything is here. This is just the current. Right? And I average over all neurons.
Over
all neurons.
For a given realization of the etas.
For a given realization
of the etas.
So no, I go the other way around.
Okay. So that's what I want to play. Like, what are these averages? Average over what?
So every population, we assume a population of integrated fire neurons.
Are you worried that you didn't put a noise term already in the first line?
I think what happened here, there's an average over some underlying process, which is Gaussian process. And the spatial average which defines what mu is.
No, but your I can be a sum of delta functions. That I don't care, actually, in this moment. You can be whatever you want. Just take what your favorite current is. Each individual neuron gets an individual current, okay?
Which doesn't... Is that calculated by any statistics?
Up to now, no. I don't assume any statistics.
Okay.
And then I just define
average of a space of a neuron.
Of a space.
And sigma.
And sigma square is just the deviation, the variance of this current. It's just the variance of a space.
Fine. Okay, that's fine. Now we'll come to the other equation. What is S eta I?
Now
eta I
is
the eta.
Now I pick a particular realization of this process. Okay? Assuming that I have some mu. And eta I is just...
It's the definition of eta.
It's just a definition.
What is the definition of agent?
Coming from the top, I could just define this this way.
So for each, at each moment, you look at the distribution of currents across the population, you average, you get mu. You compute the variance, you get sigma, and now you define eta this way.
It's just efficient definition.
No, but how you separate sigma from eta? I don't understand.
No, each, you have currents, I,
how,
I sub I.
Why can't I take part of sigma into eta I?
Part of sigma into eta I.
I think the definition of eta is random noise.
No, there's no I. Ah, Chaim, here is no index I.
So let me take.
This is a global. This is a global variable. This is global for the whole population.
And eta is normalized such a statistic of the variance. If one is one, if you average across the population.
Yeah.
So, but you said then, you said something about Gaussian or something. I don't know.
Okay. I assume this a Gaussian distribution.
So now you do introduce statistics now.
Now I introduce something.
So there is an average. There is an angular average of a population.
Yes.
There is some statistics which has to do with eta.
But that's an assumption.
This is an assumption.
Everything is assumption. The final model. I want to know what the definition.
Okay.
You don't average over statistics.
What?
To define eta, I just don't average.
You take the current.
But we only talk about Gaussian.
No, now I introduce Gaussian. I say, let's take the special case of Gaussian. We take this Langevin equation. The reason is I want to change these two numbers independently and I need some model. So I take a model. I take a Gaussian model.
I'm talking about this model.
Okay, now let's talk about this model. It's not Poisson. And now you can play around with this. You can say, okay, I keep the noise constant, and there were assumptions. We did this because there were papers telling if you have noise.
Can you go back? Sorry, I'll study.
Never end here.
No.
Could you hurry, please?
What do you do with anatomy talks?
So what?
Anatomy talk gets to bring the rat.
Yeah, because this isn't the main point.
It is.
When
in C.
It's sigma times eta, but eta is 1 over sigma. So at the end of the day, it's and then the mu's cancel, so it's the
EI. Right?
EI is the only random variable.
Right. EI is the real currents which you
yeah. The reason to do this is actually because an individual neuron doesn't distinguish between noise and signal. Every current is some input current. The question is, how do you find noise? How do you find signal? Depending on time, if you have only one neuron, you cannot do this. You have just one current.
This is just a trick in which you took the
it's a trick.
And you split it to mu and a variance and Heim's complaint. And then
you forget about it. Okay, that's
so eta I is the only thing you're going to deal with, because that's going to set the variance for the individual cell.
Good.
That's it. Okay. No, I mean, but I have to say it was a little
okay. Confusing. So now I can play around with this. I go fast. This is like an experiment. You just keep the noise. You have a population of integrating fire neurons, and you change mu instantaneously at time whatever five in time constant of membrane time constant. And there were claims that this will be fast, but the point is, in our simulations, and we will see why this happens actually later on, this takes. It's rapid, depending on all kinds of parameters, how large a step is, and where you are in the beginning, and things like that, but it is a smooth function. Okay? That's important. Because if you change... So you keep the mean now constant. Yeah? So you have mean constant, and you make a step in the noise level, which is just the sigma. You make a step from 0.6, it doesn't really matter. What you find then numerically first is that you get it instantaneous. So as the smaller you make your integration time, it doesn't really matter. You get an instantaneous change in the response rate. So this is rate, this is time, and this is the step in the sigma.
This is changing,
not,
this is keeping eta constant and changing sigma.
No, changing sigma.
So in one case, I have mu, I switched mu and kept sigma constant, and this was case one, and case two was a step in sigma and mu constant, okay? Just to keep the two situations separate. So the question is now, why is a change in the mean leading to a somewhat smooth response, and why does a step in the sigma lead to a, I need another color. why does it lead to a rapid response? It's different from the Bruce Nye's case. We are here in the middle of noise, right? In both cases, we have a finite noise. So, and this is the first hint that the sigma is actually a variable you should look at in order to transmit signals, rapid signals. And the analysis is actually very simple. Once you have the Langevin equation and you have the Gaussian noise, then you know that this distribution obeys the Fokker-Planck equation. Is there a light? Yeah? So, so now this, I call it P, now it's rho. Doesn't really matter. Okay? Fokker-Planck equation is just the temporal change of the distribution depends on the derivative versus V of the flux, probability flux. And the probability flux is just the number which depends on the mean minus D.
Is that J dot in the flux or?
This is just, it's not a dot, it's just, I'm sorry for the dot. It's J, no derivative, okay. Just J. I'm sorry. Okay, this is the flux, and it depends on this, and you see that the flux depends on some number which depends on the mean and the variance times the derivative of rho. Well, it's a general equation, it's in the textbooks. The point here is that for our special case of integrate and fire with a threshold, yes, the threshold and the reset actually impose boundary conditions on the solution of this equation. And in particular, I will not go into this in detail, but the one boundary condition is that it has to go to zero at threshold. Okay? So if you put everything in and you are interested only in the flux going over the threshold, which is just the rate, okay? The flux over the threshold is the rate. So the flux at threshold, depending on time, is the rate. Then the first term vanishes because it goes omega times rho. Rho at threshold is zero. So it depends only, and this is the main point here, it depends only on the slope of this distribution at threshold times sigma square half. Okay?
It's a current.
Okay. So this is a very interesting thing, actually. I found it very...
So this is like Bruce's claim that it goes like a current. If you're sensitive to the current, you know, the voltage.
No currents here. I'm describing the rate. I'm just asking what is the rate of a population and what does it depend on?
No, you can make current in terms of flux.
Oh, this is the probability current, yes. Probability current. Yes. And the nice thing is here, you know that the distribution obeys a partial differential equation, which is just Fokker-Planck equation. So every change goes smoothly in time, in rho. But if you change this factor, it's just a number, then this number will affect immediately the rate. This number is just the variance. So if you do a jump in the variance, this guy will just don't notice, it will take time, while the rate will make a jump. The other way around, if you change mu, so the mean, this constant stays, is not time dependent, and the distribution has to settle to the new equilibrium value.
But you have omega,
well,
times rho zero. This is why I think.
Yeah. So as soon as you have noise, and it doesn't really depend on the amount, changes in the mean into the population can only be transmitted after some time, while changes in the variance are transmitted immediately. Yes?
You say it all, T. This is the number of neurons that are just before, that are just going to fire. Why do you say it's zero?
The flux depends on two parts.
Yes.
And if it was finite,
yes,
then the slope would be infinite, and this time would diverge. The smallest amount of noise, intuitively speaking, would give you an infinite rate until this new state appears where it goes to zero again. So if you would prepare it, you know, and switch on everything, then you would get an infinite rate. It's not a problem. mathematically, it's not a problem. You can have a very short infinite rate, and then the system will immediately settle into this condition, because otherwise you will always have this diverging term here. You cannot keep an infinite rate for a long time, right? And this is intuitive, but this is all, I think it's 70s or something. It's even in Tuckwell?
Tuckwell.
It's in Tuckwell. But the main result here is that changes in the variance will be transmitted immediately. So I mean, I tried to skip some parts, which is because I want to show the experiments. I think the most interesting part here is the experiments. But when you look at this formula, so you have and you say this is the instantaneous rate. As I showed, the changes in the mean will just be, so to say, low-pass filtered by the time it takes that the distribution settles into the new stationary or a new state. So distribution is something which has inertia. So since you have a multiplication here, it means that you have a low-pass filter for the mean, for signals of the mean, and a high-pass filter for signals in the variance. Okay? Changing this just will be the faster the change is, the better. If this change is slow, this will intermingle with this, because changes in the variance also change the distribution, which will follow, and this will give a mess, so to say. Only if this signal is very, very fast, it will just go through. And this guy will just sit there. Imagine you have a rapid change in the variance, so just this number changing rapidly around some mean as a baseline, don't call it mean, against the temporal baseline, then this guy will just sit there because it's inert. You see? Okay, so I've skipped the filter part. So now we can go and play around and change things rapidly. As I said, it works. So if you change the mean, say every tenth of the time constant of the neurons, you just play around. You just random number, you generate a random current, yes, with constant variance, and then you try, and then you plot here the output rate. So one curve is the mean, and the other curve is the output rate. Just put them on top. One is red, one is black, but you don't see it on the projection. And then you plot the output rate versus the instantaneous current at either of these points, you get a cloud. Right, so given the output rate, it's very hard to guess what the input current was. And if you do the same thing with a, it's actually hard to imagine, but the same thing you can do with the variance. You can keep the mean current constant, mean over the population constant in time, and you change the variance across the population every time step. I don't tell you how to do it, I just do it, right? And then I ask, what is the response of the neurons? And this is a black line here, and you see already in this picture that this follows just faithfully. It's just what I said here. If I change the variance rapidly, I change this factor, and essentially this part stays there. And now the plot, the rate versus, this is standard deviation, shows you that you get this nice square function, which is something which you would expect because d is sigma square half. So you would expect.
What is the line?
The line is just ignored. So now comes the part which is, so to say, seems to be most far from experiments, which is that you just change both at the same time. So you have random, at every point in time, you choose a random input current and a random variance. Just at every time, you make jumps of both. Okay? Can you imagine that? And then you just estimate the output rate of the population. And then you ask, will it be correlated with the mean or will it be correlated with the variance? And I mean, it doesn't need much now to guess that it's correlated with the variance and not correlated with the mean.
These are short time jumps.
This is jumps in tenths of the membrane time constant.
Tenths.
tenths. But the faster you do this, the better for the sigma. Let's skip this. So we played around with this. This was like a game on the blackboard. And Misha was asking, was then talking to Gilly Silverback, and he actually did experiments. So you can do all of this in slice by injecting currents into a cell. Why not? You inject a current, and you give it a certain mean in time and a certain variance. You repeat the experiment, you take a different random number generator with the same time course and variance, and then you can pick up the rates and things like that. So that's what they did, and this is what they actually sent me as a fax, and I found this absolutely surprising, because in our analysis, we put in leaky integrate and fire, which has a fixed threshold, which may be far from reality, I don't know. We didn't take any biophysics actually into account, so it is not trivial to find exactly what you predict from the theory in the experiment, right? And this is what they got. So,
can you explain?
Yes. Yeah, these are just the first experiments, as far as I see. So this is time actually in seconds.
What kind of cell is
it? This is a red somatosensory cell, pyramidal cell. But they did it with all kinds of cells, interneurons, pyramidal cells. Whatever cell they found the same effect. So it actually doesn't really matter. So what is shown here is just rate estimations at every point in certain bins. I actually don't know, 100 millisecond bins. How many bins are here between? So this is 100 milliseconds. So I guess 10 millisecond bins. They count the spikes. They repeat the experiment. Here they make a jump in the mean. And the dots, so the crosses here, they correspond to the jumps in the mean. So you get a smooth response and it settles, while if you do a jump in the variance, you get an instantaneous response and it settles.
I'm sorry, Klaus, I'm not quite understanding. On the ordinate is rate?
Yeah, actually they have their plot program shows millivolt, but that's number of action potentials.
Okay, that's rate.
It's and just number of action potentials.
Seconds, and the points are?
The points are when you make a jump in the mean injected current.
In the mean injected current, and that's data.
And these are data.
Uh-huh.
And if you make a jump in the, you keep the mean injected current constant, you make a jump in the variance, you find that the rate makes an instantaneous jump.
And then it decays
because... Yeah, it decays. The thing, then this guy starts to settle into this new...
And that bump at the beginning is because they turn off...
Ah, yeah, the bump is actually the transient when they turn out the experiment.
So both of those are data?
Both of those are data, yeah.
So the dots are many different...
Yeah, but the experiment, that's just what so the prediction is.
So right? the dots are a jump in the mean, and the solid lines
are
a jump in the
variance. Yes. Same neuron, same experiment, just repetitions.
So when you have a big jump in the variance, the input current would have a big VIDT, right?
Yes.
And so this is another way of looking at this is just to say that neurons respond well to changes.
When do you have? You have also, if you make a jump in the mean, you also have a steep thing at every neuron.
Yeah, but if you have a jump. I'm just trying to picture what a current looks like.
I kept quiet until now. Misha knows that I can't keep quiet so long.
It's not good for you.
I think it's the wrong way to actually present it. I'm sure Klaus was warned by Misha that I was saying. The thing is, there is white noise here. Yeah. So when you make a sort of a small jump in sigma, the current goes wild. Because it's unbounded in time, there's no filtering of it. There's no bound and so on.
No, it doesn't depend on Gauss. We did it with a box. If you think that it depends on the Gaussian tails, it's not true.
If you do it with a box, there is no difference between mean and sigma, because the neuron this poor neuron doesn't know about whether it's mu or whether it's sigma.
No, the individual neuron doesn't know this.
Yeah, so all the etas will be the same. I mean, then you're telling me it would be smoother. Suppose all the eta i's will be the same. So you're telling me it would be slow response?
If all the eta i's are the same, then I have a change in mu.
So you are saying that if you take this poor neuron,
yes,
and all the guys would see the same jump,
yes,
you're saying the response will be smoother?
Yes.
I mean, Misha, we're good. We have done it.
Yeah, you should go to the next. We know that if you have a very change, big change in you, you get fast response. But the point here is signaling. So if you go to the next slide.
No, but give me a dream that if all the eight hours will be the same, it will not be slower, it will be even faster.
This will be corresponding to a very, very big change.
But that's the point. The point is that it's not nothing you show noise.
That's not the point.
Because the issue here is not how fast can you make the neurons to respond. You can make
the issue.
No, slowly.
Because it didn't show you the menu.
No. This is the first thing I saw. It's just an indication.
Can you hold a second? The one thing I didn't understand is your co-calculation dependent on averaging over a population.
Yes.
With one cell.
Yes, okay.
So that kind of...
No, but this is a cell. It's over a population of identical cells.
That's population of identical cells.
No. You average over the repetitions of the...
You had an index. You averaged over...
You average over the input time.
I mean, it doesn't seem that this...
That's what I do, but it's...
You average over the input of samples of the input time.
But that's not this data.
Imagine you had thousands of identical cells, each of them.
This is the one how you generate all these coins. I mean, how you generate so many coins?
I thought this is time.
But each time you see many points. How do you see many points each time?
No, that's not true. No, that's not true.
This is one experiment.
This is
shot experiment.
I showed you the bad data. I show you better data.
These
points are next to each other. There's no on top of each other. It's just the way it's plotted. It's one bin to the next.
I understand this part. You had a theory which was averaging, and you have an experiment which is one shot.
No, I repeat the experiment.
Okay, so that's the point. What are you showing here?
Okay, I tell you.
I didn't understand what it is.
Okay, so you take a neuron. Okay, you inject a constant. In this case, you inject a constant current.
Yes.
Okay, and you add some noise, Gaussian noise. Okay, and you change the variance of the noise at some point.
What do you plot here? At each moment of time, what is plotted?
This is just the number of spikes in this time bin.
In which time?
Average. The short time bin, 10 milliseconds. One millisecond.
So it is a 0-1. How can you get 10 spikes?
So you repeat.
You just count. Experiment. Now you repeat the experiment. Either you get a spike or not a spike.
With a different noise with the same statistics.
Exactly.
Different noise.
Not the same. You need to have different, otherwise you have a mean.
All right,
you want to keep the means fixed.
So now the other question is, there's an old experiment by Segunda, which was repeated by Menon and Sadowski, which is basically get sort of a similar kind of result, because what the noise is doing is constantly de-inactivating the cell, so it's making the cell kind of hypersensitive. And does that give you the same result?
There are two things. One thing is that it's de-inactivating. The other thing is that there's a real big transient when you step the variance up. There's a little bit of the point. This is what I'm saying.
Okay. So that's the reason why this is not the final result. It's just the first indication that something of our theory has something to do with the data. But as Chaim pointed out, this cannot be interesting. If you want to have a neuron fire rapidly after some point in time, you just give a huge current. That's it. And if it's not fast enough, you give a higher current. I mean, in principle, there is no problem. Yes? But you will get a kind of all or none type of result. You would get a spike at a particular point in time, but that's it. But what I'm talking about here is to transmit a continuous signal. Yes? I want to have a graded signal. I just don't want to have spikes as inside Menon and Segunovsky at particular points. What I want to have is at each point in time something which reflects the input signal in a graded manner. Okay? So if I get a small jump, I want to have a small response. If I have a large jump, I want to have a large response, not a spike. Yes? And that's actually what now we come to the main thing. So I make a big jump to actually this, what I showed you in the simulation, where you change simultaneously, so big jump, yeah? Where you change simultaneously. This was simulation, where you change simultaneously mu and sigma at every point in time. So I think in the experiment, this is simulation, but I will show you the experiment soon. in the experiment, in the simulation, we did this every tenth of the time scale, the time membrane time constant. I think we did it here every millisecond in the experiment. So you change. Now you have at each point in time, you have a mean current, mean over the population, mean over the repetitions, mean this in the experiment. Since you cannot record from 1,000 cells, you take one cell and repeat the experiment 1,000 times. This is as if you would use a population of 1,000 identical cells. Okay? So you change. So what is plotted here is the instantaneous value of the variance at each point in time and the output rate. And here the instantaneous value of the mean and the output rate. And you clearly see this correlates only with the variance and not the mean. Now what is important here, Chaim, is that you have small values for small sigma square and large values for large sigma square. Okay.
But also dIdt is going to go like the variance too, right? The rate of change of the current that you're injecting is going to, if you have a big variance, you're going to have a big rate of change in the current you're injecting.
So if you make change in the current, you get the following. This is the mean, and each individual trace will look like this. Okay? If you make a change in the variance, you will have a constant mean, and each individual neuron will go like this. Each individual neuron will go like this. Some will, at this point, some will make a steep jump up, and some will make a steep jump down. Here, everybody will make a steep jump up. Yeah. That's the only difference. The difference is not that in one part there is a steep jump and in the other not. The difference is that we have here a mixture of jumps up and down, which keep the distribution more or less next to some stationary value, while in this case, we make only a jump up, which pulls this distribution out of its stationary value. That's the only difference. The jumpiness, so to say, is the same.
But the size of the jump may not be the same in both cases, huh? Because when you double the mean, what you're doing is you're doubling. When you double the variance, you're making a real big jump in VDT at that time because your noise is stretched suddenly.
Yeah, I don't understand what you're saying. That it doesn't matter whether it's if you change mu,
yes,
to the same amount of size as not sigma but the actual variance of the current, which in Gaussian can be infinity. So you're saying that the mean will not. Here it looks like the neuron doesn't care about mu at all.
Yeah, at this time scale, we actually this is to get a good picture. We took a time scale on which we changed is very rapidly. We changed both very rapidly. And since the population cannot react rapidly, it will only react to the sigma. If you change it slowly, more slowly, then this guy will just go to its... This will be more correlated with a slow change. So it depends on the time scale. But only thing I'm saying here is if I want to transmit signals which vary rapidly in time, then I'd better do it with a variance. That's so, the whole message.
No, but the question is, when you say variance, is variance respect to time or to space? That's the whole
variance thing. Respect to space.
And I claim it's wrong. If you take mu of t,
yes,
and do it Gaussian, mu of t will be some sigma times Gaussian variable. Mu of t itself is a Gaussian process,
yes,
with some variance.
Yes.
And you change this variance, what will happen? You'll get something which is like this, or you'll get a mu jump?
You'll get the same.
No. He is asking if you take mu, you have some range of changing.
Here's a range of changing mu in a box.
Yeah, but now I'm saying you think about mu as a Gaussian process.
Now good. Oh, good. Now the mu will change and it will have some values here and some values there. That's what you're saying.
No, change the standard variance of this Gaussian process.
Where do you put the signal? In the mu itself or in the variance of mu?
In the variance of mu. So mu of t is sigma of t.
No, but he confuses space and time.
Variable.
He confuses space and time. You confuse space and time.
This is mu now.
No, if this is your, this is what we take. We
That's
take mu. This is what we do.
Change now the variance.
Okay. So it goes like
at
this.
At a given of time, right. And now I want to know how the neuron will respond to this change. You change the variance of
mu, not in the mu itself.
The variance of mu change.
That's a different issue.
No, but that's the issue.
Why should I do this?
Sigma eta, you call it noise, and
no, what I do is that noise. I change and over the population.
But that's not.
I can.
It's not a fair comparison. You should compare variance. If you are telling me that what's important is the label I in the eta, what you have to compare is changing the variance of this common signal versus the variance of individual signal. This would be the fair comparison if you want to convince us that it's important to have this eta I, index I there. You're saying what's important is not the dynamics of the current,
yes.
It's actually the fact that you have eta I, which are different etas in different nodes. In yes. order to be convinced, this would be the fair comparison. Do Gaussian, common Gaussian things with changing the variance, and do individual Gaussian like changing your data. And then tell us whether the neural will not respond to this. And I'm saying here we have enormous response.
You're saying each stuff
you don't want to have enormous response.
I don't want to have enormous response.
Okay.
I just want to have faithful signaling.
Smaller response, you need to have AI. Well, it sounds more reasonable than saying that in order to have fast response, you need AI.
Right. So this was a mistake when you said it earlier that you got
fine. So
now what he wants to say is that if you want to have a population rate which would fall,
I think that would be the comparison to show.
But if you, but you already say you say that you will have enormous response.
But I don't say that. But but this enormous response may depend on the lines.
But what do you mean enormous response? Close to saturation?
I don't know. Show me. I'm just saying this would be the comparison to do.
Okay, but the point is that if you want to have a population rate which goes, let's say, from 5 hertz to 20 hertz, changing
maybe,
every
maybe also do that. I don't know.
No.
You
have to show me. I mean, that's the point.
Yeah, but Chaim, slowly. Okay? So this situation where you have
it will be infinite, so of course you will have infinite response. Just
but that's what you have sigma eta, the eta is
infinite,
Gaussians.
No, but changing
now the Gaussian is
all of a sudden to plus infinity, what does it mean?
Who will go to plus infinity?
You have Liubica Gaussians, right?
Well, but you have also current which goes to plus infinity.
But you don't give me infinity.
Yeah.
So when mu goes to plus infinity,
yeah.
And you define mu as the average across the population,
yeah.
It will mean that every individual neuron at this given time will have an upswing in the current.
Yeah.
So they will all respond.
Yeah.
So it means that in terms of the population rate at this given time,
you'll
have infinite population rate.
Yeah.
Now I'm saying,
you measure it over some 10 milliseconds.
Right.
Fine.
I'm just saying that this is what. Okay. You look at this. Now you don't. That's not what you want here.
I don't know. If you just smear it over 2 milliseconds, then you don't get infinite. You get some number of spikes per. No. You don't measure infinite.
So what is the signal that you want to transmit? Let's say I give you a signal.
No, but now, okay. But what do you mean you have infinite rate? I don't understand.
Well, if you have all of the neurons firing within
the same time,
it means that you will have
everything. It's a thousand of spikes.
Right, so it's okay. Not saturated. So I pose the problem of signaling the following way. I give you a signal, some time template, right, which has some set of numbers changing every millisecond. And I want you to have a population which, with the firing rate, population firing rate equals to this. So I want to have a population rate which goes from 1 millisecond to another, going through intermediate levels. I'm just saying that if you do the trick which you do, you will not have this.
Yeah.
Because you'll have a firing rate of population saturating.
I mean, the role of noise is smearing changes. Right. It makes more sense than to advertise noise as the way to get fast response. That's what I'm saying. That's all.
No, this is not the point of fast response. It's the point of signaling. Okay.
Signaling.
Fast signal.
Okay.
Because to get response, it means that it's just one time event.
Okay.
Signal is something which has to go on for some continuous time.
If you plot, I mean, you can try. I mean, we actually didn't finish this, but you can try to estimate the filter exactly. So what the cutoff is and things.
I suggested to do these simulations and to show it.
Okay.
That's what we like.
No, that's okay. That doesn't make a problem.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. Let's look at it tomorrow after lunch. Let's look at
this again. So? It's something I want to understand. When you jump the variance, so every cell has its you jump the variance, but how the eta i's are varying between the cells. Eta i's is a sigmas are doing two.
Eta i is different than every cell.
Eta i is different than every cell. Yes.
So every cell is seeing the same variance of the noise, but it's seeing a different time.
That doesn't seem that.
No, the individual noise just sees a current. Just sees current. The variance is only defined with respect to the mean of the population. But that, since the population is the number we are looking at, we are looking at the population rate. This is the meaningful number, right? So even though the individual neuron doesn't know about the population, we have a population effect, because what counts is the distribution, which is defined by all the neurons, where the individual neurons doesn't really matter. And the only thing which really matters is the slope at the threshold. That's it. I found it actually extremely amazing that you can do this in vitro experiments, and you change now both, and you just calculate the cross-correlation function between either the variance or the mu, the mean, and the rate. So you have two input signals, one output signal, and you just cross-correlate them, and you see if you cross-correlate the mu with the output rate, you get essentially a flat curve, while if you cross-correlate the sigma square.
Well, that's fascinating. So, but if you had now gone to, instead of 0.1 tau, 10 tau, you would have gotten the opposite curve.
Yes.
Okay, so, but this is...
No, then it depends. No. Then it depends on both. That's what I showed at the very beginning. If you go to the very, very slow time scale, then you have essentially a tuning, a gain function, which depends on both. And then you cannot put it this way. Then it doesn't switch, so to say, from one to the other, but it is just depending on both. It's what you have a dependency on I, and you have a dependency on sigma. You have just the rate will just depend on both sigma and mu.
Just because of what's happening at low currents. Okay.
No, it depends on
this. But you go back to the other curve.
Yeah, but this curve is misleading, because here sigma goes to 0.5, and here sigma goes to 4. You see?
Okay.
And they actually see that these are analytical results. So what you see is that here strange things happen. It first goes slow, which is here, but as soon as your sigma exceeds a certain value, it goes like actually a similar slope.
So the bottom line to this is a strong statement for experiments. I mean, you poke your cell and you plot F versus I, which is F minus mu in your language.
Yes.
Right? Then that's only half the story. You have to be plotting it. Right?
That's the message.
Noise generators.
Yes, that's the message. Watch the noise, yeah. I mean, theoretically, it's a trivial thing that the noise drives can drive the neuron across threshold.
No, I understand. It's a threshold. It's clear.
But I mean, I find it.
But you're making a stronger statement.
Well, I'm not sure what's the strongest statement. Tell me, what is the strongest statement? What is the bottom line?
The bottom line is, if you have a population, you can look at the mean current into the population, and you can look at the variance into the population. Both will drive the cells. Okay?
And faster.
And now, if you change these signals independently and rapidly, the mu will not do the job. Beyond
the job. What is the job?
Yeah, that's what the mean. Job?
Yeah. No, that's the question. What is.
The output is filtered if you only use mu as the stimulus, but if you consider mu plus the variance as the stimulus, the output is less filtered.
That's fine, but that's because as I said, it doesn't have to do with this noise. It has to do with having big fluctuation, temporal fluctuation.
Yes, that's why.
Right. So I think there are two points. One is that if you have this temporal fluctuation, forget about population, you just have a current to a neuron, and if you change just a constant current, like you change it in some, let's say, step, then as you nicely showed, you have a response which takes time, and then if you have a wild change, when you change its variance, forget about population, then you have a fast response because you have these big changes.
Okay.
That's one thing.
And that's one thing.
I think it's very clear. Now there is another thing which is less, I mean, that has to do with population, which I think the claim here is that if you do it for individual neurons, then you have a linear relation. I think that's the point. You have a linear relation between the change in the rate and the variance?
Yes, here you have a linear relation. If you do it rapidly, then you have a linear relation.
So for that, I guess you need the...
Actually, you see it also in the experiment. That's for... Yeah. And it comes out just for free. I think this line is even a least square fit, right? It just goes to zero. It's just a linear.
Now, to see it in these experimentals, you have to read the averaging.
So Klaus, so
for a given trial, there is no population. You have one cell and you have one color.
Only defined with respect to the population, right? It's a pure population effect. Even though the neurons are not coupled, nothing. Right. This is a pure population effect.
So Klaus, a way of testing this, here's my intuition. My intuition is that when you put synaptic input into a cell, the variance does not change as much as you would expect it to. The variance doesn't go up in proportion to the mean.
Yes.
And the reason is because there's so much synaptic noise in the background that you would have a very small change in variance with a real input into a cell. But that may be wrong. I don't know. So the experiment to do would be in a...
But you have also low-pass filtering in the synaptic conductance.
Sure. So the experiment to do would be to hyperpolarize a voltage clamp a cell, and then look exactly how you do the experiment would be difficult. But look at and see what happens to the mean current and to the noise as you change the input into the cell in a realistic way. And if it's really true that the variance is an important part of the signal, the variance is going to be changing a lot. And if my intuition is right, that the variance won't change very much because there's so much background noise, then that would argue against this.
Well, the background noise just provides some baseline.
Yeah,
if you have some constant value of the noise, if it doesn't change, then...
If it doesn't depend on the signal?
Yeah, but the variance is just going to add to these two processes, and you're going to have a big variance, and you're going to have a small variance on top of it.
That's true.
But the mean is going to change quite a bit.
The question is whether you can control it, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, that is just a way of seeing if, in fact, the variance does change enough to have it be a good signal.
Okay, you just questioned the whole idea that variance changes enough just to notice it or at all.
Yes, right. So, I mean, for sure, if you suddenly change the variance from your analysis, which is really nice, or just from the simple notion that the DI, DT is a very good signal, you can expect to see a big jump in frequency. But the question is that actually used, or how much is it used?
That's a good question.
That would be to look at the input to the cell, the synaptic currents, and see what they look like.
See if the sigma did change as well as this point.
But since this is just a biophysical way of showing that this is a possibility, and nobody really looks at the variance of signals depending on time, right?
Well, that's not true. If you go back to these early Darian Mountcap papers by Mountcastle and Darian Smith, and I mean, people refute this. Roma refutes this fellow a little bit. Refutes this, but you have these very beautiful graphs where you have this sort of classic Mountcastle paradigm where an animal's finger is being tapped, right? And he looks at the variability in the number of spikes as a function of the frequency of the tapping. And the number of spikes you have is pretty independent of the number of spikes over about a factor of 30 in frequency.
Independent on frequency.
Of the frequency of the tap. You can tap, 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 tap. Right. Mm-hmm. What's varying? What's changing actually is the
variance of the spike number.
Is the variance in this right? In the spike number unit time, and he makes a story about this. They're hard papers to read, and people sort of ignore them.
So this is really long.
But you would need to look at the variance of currents, right? Input currents.
He didn't do that. There is a literature, right, where the mean number is not of spikes, right, is not changing, but the fluctuations in the spike timing is changing.
So these are quite regular neurons, right? Because otherwise, they more or less will behave the same, right? The lines in the mean, more or less follow each other. Because they're locked to the stimulus.
First they're locked and then less locked.
They're locked to the stimulus frequency.
Yeah.
So they're more regular.
Right.
And if you faster you get more failures, then you get more Poisson. Right?
Well, it's actually
almost trivial.
It actually was like an optimal frequency. It was running. I mean, I just happen to remember it was somewhere between.
So because if you take a periodic signal and you just take every 10th spike, this is very next to a Poisson process.
And hard to
distinguish.
It's worth taking a look. I mean, I think it's the same. I mean, it just turns out that we see exactly the same things in the rats when you tap their whiskers.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't change the average spiking rate. You just push the timing of the spikes over. So there's some.
So?
But that's reduction variance.
What?
There's always a tendency to reduce variance. I'm worse off the chart, trust me. in not understanding. Everything that I think of is that you're describing, you can reduce the variance.
Right, at some frequency, they're highly locked.
But it's also, if you reduce the variance, you don't have to increase, you can also reduce.
You can reduce, you can just
change.
Change.
So you don't care that the variance went down.
No, well, no. You just take it, choose a value.
That's the signal. So, the claim for this, 25-year-old Mountcastle paper is that it's the variance in the spike train, which is changing, and from that you can read off the frequency of impact. Yeah, with the ambiguity, that's a peak. What?
Yeah.
You could believe that.
I could believe that. But
may I add something?
Question.
I want to.